It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
How are you, Mike?
I am awake and aware. I'm surprised. I slept pretty well, although it was a relatively late night at the Matanuska Susitna School Board meeting last night.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've been at that long a meeting together, it seems.
Yes, that is true. So we had, as I was reflecting, three meetings this
right.
week. The one last night, which was a regular board meeting. And then, of course, the regular assembly meeting past mm-hmm. Tuesday. And then at the same time, over at the Palmer City Council chambers, Palmer City Council had a joint meeting with its Board of Economic Development. And, wow, where shall we start? Should we work backwards or forwards? Or what?
Yeah, let's start at the beginning of the week, if you don't mind. I have some highlights of I attended both the borough regular scheduled meeting and, along with you, Mike, the school board meeting. But why don't you start with the economic development meeting and clue me in on that one, because I haven't been able to listen to the tape yet. So,
sure.
How did that go, Mike?
I think it went well. And there are a couple of takeaways. I'm going to, first of all, just remind listeners that when we're talking about the Board of Economic Development, that's a body that provides advice to the council about proposals, ideas around economic development in the city of Palmer. That's chaired by Dusty Silva, and there's representation, a pretty wide representation from people who both, in this case, live within or without the city. So, for example, there are some well-known people that are on that Board of Economic Development, and they are including Janet Kincaid, including the owner of Vagabond Blues, including just a good group.
Barbara Hunt.
Yeah, Barbara Hunt. A good group of people that are interested in have a vested interest, if you will. They have, in many ways, skin in the game. And they're thoughtful on what they do. Brad Hansen is the person from the city who works with them carefully, and they seem to be very happy with the kind of information that he has with a long history of involvement with the city. So I'm just going to touch upon a couple of things that came up that they talked about at some point. One was actually the structure of the committee itself, because there are some non-voting members that are sitting on that Board of Economic Development that come from, for example, the city council. And so the question was, this is the only body of its sort, planning and others, that report advisory, et cetera, that don't have that kind of connection. And so they're going to revisit why that is so and how that should be perhaps changed in the future. The second thing they talked about...
Just go ahead. Touching on that, Mike, does it sound like they want to include people from the council or to add them to other committees?
No, I think it was raising the question that this seemed to be an anomaly. And it was a question of saying, well, why should this be? But we really don't necessarily have to have someone from the council who is over there. They're not really a voting member. It's probably it needs to be revisited. So that's what they're doing. They're revisiting why this anomaly is there with the Board of Economic Development.
But good point.
Yeah. And then the second focus, they spent a fair amount of time with. First of all, they did a review, review of 2018 and looking to 2019. But I won't get into the detail of that so much as to say that one of the topics that was brought up and focused on a bit was parking. And the city manager pointed out clearly that parking was described as something of a problem by other people. People looked at it, whether you were a developer who was putting a new building together or whatever, or you were just an individual who noticed that there wasn't enough parking for particular events. But there are also people that said that rather than thinking in terms of increasing parking, there was some suggestion that parking could be lessened in certain areas. So parking remains an issue that this was not definitively discussed there, but is obviously something that will be discussed further on by the Board of Economic Development and eventually the Council. The real question in my mind, and I brought it up, was has there been a parking study done showing actually where people park now throughout the year and when? And to my knowledge, that hasn't been done. So that'll be an interesting thing that comes up.
Right. And it's a topic that a lot of kind of cities are taking on right now as they reevaluate sort of the lifestyle of the people that live in these small knitted communities that have an option not to have a car.
Right.
And it goes even beyond parking. It goes to, you know, how we fund our maintenance and snow removal and that sort of thing. A lot of the parking is, like you said, Mike, based on old ways of living that people got in their car and drove to everything. Now, because partly due to congestion, partly due to the fact people are embracing more healthy lifestyles, they aren't moving their cars as much, and they're not owning as many cars, and actually, statistically, they're not even getting driver's licenses as much as they used to be. So as we kind of go into the future and, you know, out there, whether we like to talk about it or not, or driverless cars coming this way, and you know, will they be just driving through town and dropping people off? Will people even own a car anymore?
Right.
So it is a worthwhile study, and knowing kind of how slowly Palmer moves, I think that would be money well spent to not only get a parking study of where they are now, because I think it's important to know where you were, where you are, and but also to look at cities like theirs and like climates and like size and see how they're tackling that issue so they, you know, have some reference points to look at. But it's a big topic. Doesn't sound like it.
Yep.
But it is a big topic.
And the last reference is an interesting one. Two of the City of Palmer Council members, Sabrina Combs and Julie Berberick, announced that after the Gil Penalosa presentation, and after a reminder that it might be useful to have council members and others actually go around a self-described walkable community for a period of time and see what it's really like to eschew essentially getting into a car and driving. Those two council members said, yep, they were starting the next day, Wednesday, yesterday, and they have begun. There have been some postings about their travel around. So basically what they're doing is either riding a bicycle or walking but not using a car for a week. And we're looking forward to a report both during that time and after it's over about what they discover about the community and its walkability, et cetera. So that's an interesting thing.
I mean, I'm glad that they're using a couple of different modes in that walking and riding, because it's two completely different experiences.
Exactly.
And, you know, it would be very nice, and I can certainly see Sabrina and Julie trying that, to walk behind a stroller or try to navigate a wheelchair, or, you know, just trying to test some of those things that other people are challenged that just don't have a car already in mode of transportation. And also, I think they'll be looking to see if we did encourage more public transportation in the city, how that would flow and what that would look like. And as Sabrina, I think, has said on one of her postings, it's certainly not meant to be a critique of the way that the city is handling their snow removal. It's more of a design issue she's kind of looking at. Snow removal, too, that's a big thing, because that's part of design. But how have we designed things for the flow, and what are the barriers to good walkability, really? And it, you know, comes down to the same thing that we've been saying since the Penalosa presentation. Palmer's a good city. Let's make it a great city. And there's some really simple things, low-hanging fruit, some would say, to do to make that happen. And finding some of these barriers and firsthand experience by our leaders who really are the decision makers is pretty great way to start, I think. So bravo for those two council people.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let's go over to the other side of town, to the Borough Assembly Building then, because that same evening, Tuesday, was the assembly meeting, and you were there. Are you still with us?
Sorry, Mike. Yeah, I was there. Matt Beck was on the phone for the good part of it, so he was not there. And but it was a pretty robust meeting. I pulled a few things out here. They did an approval of what they do every year of a federal legislative priorities. These are kind of they've done this for many years now. The district does it too, sort of letting the federal delegation know these are our priorities for our area. And the one that they don't number these, so it's kind of always been in my mind questionable. Are they in order? Shouldn't they be in order? But they do list them. And the very first one is the septic facility, Mike. We've been talking about for a long time. There's we of course have to take all of our septic, or for the borough anyway, to Anchorage and dump it, and that's becoming not only expensive but limiting, because as Anchorage tries to deal with their own waste products, there's going to be some time in the future where we may get turned back on that. So they've been working on a facility. They've gotten some seed money from the DEC. There's some planning going on. It sounds like there may even be going out for some bid proposals based on a private-public partnership type operation where they own the facility and maybe a private party runs it. Not quite sure about that. The details are still coming out on that, but they believe the cost of that to be about $20 million. So kind of a big lift there, but that's on it. The Port McKenzie rail extension, which sits kind of not complete yet. They've got it $130 million. I think that's going up about $5 million. Third Meridian is on there. There's a whole list of fish protection. There was went by pretty well. There was some conversation and dissent in having the proposed new visitor center just coming into Palmer that has kind of a long history of being the old one being moved and not the funding quite done for a new facility. Whether that should be on this list. Assemblyman Sumner took objection to that. He didn't think that should be here, mostly because he, for several reasons. One, most notably, I think, was that he felt that it was in competition with some of these others that were more beneficial to the borough. He didn't prevail. And with the argument from the other side saying that this is just puts them in a position to get not ask for federal funds for it, but to leverage to be able to get some grants for it. So they felt fine leaving these visitor center on there. So that was kind of the only little kerfuffle in that
Piece
of legislation. The other one I think that was significant, Mike, was the yearly report from the assessor. I think that's kind of one of the most important ones that we're going to see this year. And I know I won't get too in depth on that, Mike, because you told me last night you're going to get to interview him. And
next week.
I think if he goes through that particular handout is on the webpage. I think we are growing a lot more. Assessments did go up. I know my assessment went up. I think it's under 4%. Lots of reasonings for that, and I'm sure you'll talk to him about that. Part of it, to me, is just catch-up. We've been sort of under-appraised for a long time, and I guess I would pose that question to people that are uncomfortable with their current appraisal if you would sell your house for that much, because few people would. And we also have a state that's a non-reporting state, which is one of five states that if you sell a property, you don't have to report the sale of that property to anybody. So there is sort of a best guess scenario. It's not an exact science here because they have a bunch of information they go off of to get assessments, but it's not an exact science because we're one of these five non-reporting states. So that and the fact that they did make a big announcement about the earthquake, and that they feel that there probably are some properties, although there's no specifics yet on some properties that were damaged, so that could have affected the assessments that were done, prior to the the earthquake, and they're urging people to make sure that if there was damage, that you think that your property appraisal is less, should be less, that there is an appeal process. You have till, I think, the end of January to get your appeal in, and then I think you have to go through the whole appeal process. But they do have, 700-800 people that over the borough time that do appeal them. Not very many get overturned, but they do, there is a process there. So there is some fear that people are going to forget about the statute that requires them to do it when they do it and won't respond quick enough to get in the appeal process. So they're encouraging people that have had earthquake damage to make sure that they contact the borough and get in the process for appealing that if they think that their property appraisal should go down. So
good reminder.
So yeah, have a really good, I'll be interested in listening to that interview, Mike. And one page I think to bring to his attention is, and people's attention really, is the exemption by value of properties in the borough that aren't taxed, which means, it's borough's own property. They have a lot of property. There's a senior citizen exemption. There's a disabled veterans exemption. There are native corporations, state agencies, churches, farms. There's all kinds of anomalies that allow them not to pay taxes, which is, I think $3 billion. It's a fair amount of money. So you might just talk to him about that. They had a nice overlay. So those were the two things, I think, Mike. The only one other thing that may have got some conversation, it was a reconsideration that Assemblyman George McKee brought, having to do with the timber transfer. Being able to move timber within the valley. It was something that was done a couple of meetings ago.
Right.
He voted for it, only which you have to be on that side and the prevailing side to reconsider it. But he pulled it, saying that the vote for reconsideration to even reconsider died. But he did make it clear that he thinks it's erroneous, that it should be a much simpler document. The one in Kenai is much simpler, and that he will be bringing back new legislation about that. So that was kind of it. So that was sort of it. And the school district, Mike, where do we start?
Let's start with the 5 o'clock meeting, which was the one that involved four candidates coming before the sitting school board to plead their case with the result of one person being selected to fill the empty seat there.
There were five originally, and one withdrew. So,
four appeared. Right.
Which is really, it was the Big Lake area, we should say, District 6, now that we are district end. And for me, it was all of these candidates went in knowing they will have to run for office in October. So it's an appointment, but it's not, they'll have to run for the seat again in October. So I was really heartened to see that there were that many applicants.
Right. And ultimately, and the process perhaps for listeners who weren't there was to have them receive a set of questions where they provided written answers. And that was provided both to the public as well as to the school board. And then they came forward and they had an opportunity to speak, and then a few questions were asked of them. And then there was a voting process, which was also interesting in that the ballots were secret. There were two cycles. The first cycle resulted in two of the four being selected, and then after the next one, the winner emerged. You want to talk about the winner? We'll go directly there.
Yeah, so sounds like a well-qualified gentleman. His name is Ryan Ponder. He is a dad. I think he said he had four children, I want to say, four or five. The little one sounds like one in school. He's an attorney by trade, has served on... was very upfront. He has a military background. He joined the military when he was 17, I think he said, in the Army.
Yep.
And he also has worked because he had he's one of six children, he said, and his youngest father had committed suicide. He's now very active in suicide prevention and has done some mentoring in the schools, is on a coalition, actually serves with, and it was disclosed by member Michelson. So it went to two rounds of votes. It was between him and a gentleman from Big Lake, Chris Elder, and at the end of the day, they unanimously voted for Mr. Ponder.
Yep.
To serve. So I think he's got a pretty thick resume of activities that he's done and seems pretty focused. And
well, we'll see what happens. He said a little bit, but not very much. He was watching and learning. And,
yeah, it's a bit of an awkward situation where they go ahead and decide who it is, and then they join an existing meeting. And it does sound a little bit like he's been viewing some of the meetings and was a little bit up to target. But this was a very heavy meeting to bring someone new to the table, not only to vote on some things, but to enter in discussion on. And part of that, I think, is due to the fact that it's all in code timing-wise when someone steps down, how many days you have to do it.
Right.
So it could have been that they didn't really have much of a choice in which meeting that they tagged us onto, but it was a pretty in-depth meeting for a newbie to be up there. But I think he did fine, and I think he's going to be doing his homework, it sounded like, and he's going to be up there with some questions. So, and it is before budget time, so probably in times of the year, it's a good time to see somebody.
And then we switched to the regular meeting, and since you mentioned the budget, that was a good part of the meeting. There was a first presentation of next year's budget, and a discussion about two things that I thought were very interesting. One, that this was meant to be as transparent as possible. You could go to the website, you could get all the materials that were being provided, so you could look at, and as an individual looking on, you can see what was being talked about. There was also a discussion about the implications of varying funding strategies so that they would be able to move one way or the other with what they were doing. It was, I thought, a very clear beginning to this process. And of course, it's only the beginning as they move forward.
Yeah, the budget is something we talk about. One thing doesn't change is that the school district is the first to have to pump out their budget and the last to know what they're getting. And this year, there is a certain added level of uncertainty because the proposal from the state government or the governor's office, the governor's budget director so far, has been well publicized in that they're suggesting a $20 million cut this year and $30 million next year over funds that have already been appropriated from previous legislative session last year. And part of it is all education. Part of it is part of broadband, and another part is part of classroom. And I think that Superintendent Goya, who has been very keyed into this, tuned into it, she's been in Juneau. She's spoken to the governor. His budget doesn't come out till next week. There's a lot of discussion on this Senate Bill 39. I know you and I have spoke about it. It's been several hearings now at the Senate Finance about it. But it does, although they do have funds that they could absorb this, you can't absorb that kind of money, 1% of their budget, or I think it's $2 million, $2.6 million this year, would not have some repercussions. And more than that, Mike, I think it's the instability that they've really been trying to curb, and they've done some of that by getting an agreement with the borough for 5 years of funding, stabilized funding, know what to expect. And now they've got what they thought they had for a budget from last year for this year, because everything's a year in advance, now is uncertain. So
sure.
I thought she handled that, Superintendent Goya handled that really, really well. Was very transparent, like you said, in how she was dealing with it, who she was seeing, how they were weighing in. She also had some pretty good information having to do with some testimony she gave about the Middle College, which is somewhat unique to our area, and more importantly, what the testing has revealed on college entrance from kids that have completed at the Middle College, and they're actually doing better in those SAT tests than regular, nationally and just regular graduates. So she has some really good news. I really appreciate the way that the superintendent gives her report, because she doesn't fear or doesn't try to not tackle the hard things and to be very upfront when there is an issue, and is very thoughtful in the manner in which she speaks and also how she has planned to tackle it. But she also is really good about upbeat stuff and reporting and telling their story and the good things that they do. So that was, I think, was...
And there was some information provided for performance over time in terms of the school district, and we'll get into that in much more detail when we have more time. I wanted to mention, though, that the regular meeting was kicked off by performance by Birchwood Charter School. A very nicely done, as well as a video that showed something of how creative the school is. And I thought that was a nice opportunity to see that in action.
Yeah, another point we probably shouldn't go away from is they did provide the first look at what they're working on as a long-term strategic plan, something that came up last year, that they should have a little longer budget structural look going outward, and they've been working on. In fact, it's before they the buzzer rang on when it needed to be done, and it's kind of complex. I would encourage people to go to the school board website, and under board docs, they have all of these documents. They're very good about that, so you can read through it. Look at it. It's broken down between the students' achievement and safety and technology and capital planning. I thought that Member Michelson brought up a really good point, that it was a very important document and that he was wanting to have a work session about that. And they're talking about folding it into a meeting that might not be as heavy as the one we were at. Also, Member Berge, who said, you know, we need to make sure that the public is involved in it and get some exposure out there. So it is going to be out for prime time for people to see. That, along with the very last thing, Mike, and that has to do with boundaries changing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They are undertaking a very big, not a lot of kids, but a lot of schools affected by it. The most affected are here in the Palmer area. So they are starting off with those presentations to be tied in with their budget presentations, which start next week. Again, all that information is on the borough website as to when they start. And that is something people need to pay attention to. And last year, they also did a budget presentation via Facebook, and which I thought was great as well. And that, I think I got about 2,000 looks. So if you can't make it to the budget meetings because you're busy with your kiddos, it is worthwhile to track down where that Facebook Live one is and learn a little more about the budget.
Okay. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. Today we covered a lot of ground.
Yep.
All right. Talk to you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.